Bayard Rustin played an important role in the civil rights movement and is perhaps one of its least known leaders. He organized the first freedom rides, protesting segregated buses in the South, and was the organizer of the now famous March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom in 1963. He was a pacifist whose belief in nonviolence influenced Dr. King and other activists as they challenged the system of Jim Crow. Bayard Rustin was born 100 years ago this Saturday, and we mark that anniversary by talking about his life and his legacy. We begin with Newsweek's Kimberly Haas and her profile of Rustin in Westchester, Pennsylvania, where he was born.
As you walk down the picturesque streets of Westchester today, it's hard to believe the town was once the site of its own civil rights lunch counter protest.
It was a segregated community.
Ellen Enslow is the director of collections and curator at the Chester County Historical Society. She recounts how the civil rights leader Bayard Rustin protested discrimination, even as a high school student during the Depression.
So there were restaurants in Westchester where black people knew that they just weren't going to go because they would not be served. Someone who was visiting the other day simply quoted the story about his father going with Rustin to a restaurant, and they went in and sat down at the restaurant tables, and no one served them. And the whole idea was Rustin was doing it on purpose because he wanted to see what the reaction would be, and he knew that one person could start making a difference, even if it didn't change anything right away.
Then, this sort of segregation was the norm for most towns. In Westchester, a strong Quaker influence tempered the restrictions on African Americans, but created inconsistencies.
And you just knew where to go and where not to go. That's the way it was.
Gregory Porter shows a photo of his father's integrated track team at Westchester High School in 1932.
And that's Bayard Rustin on the right, and that's my father to the left of me. This is the mile relay team from Westchester High School that went on to, this is my father's handwriting, 1932, and the various awards that they won, the records that they set. Bayard Rustin and my father, Charles Porter, did have an incident related to this track team. They were on their way to Allentown to go in the state finals. Coach Zimmerman said, when we get up to Allentown to the hotel, I want you white boys to get off and get your bags and go in the lobby. The color boys just stay on the bus because you're going to go to a church. They'll find members of the church that are going to put you up in their homes. Somewhere between when the coach made that statement and when they arrived at the hotel, they told the coach and said, if we can't stay together, we're not going to run together.
Those early actions set a pattern for Rustin's life. His Quaker roots instilled both a strong sense of social justice and nonviolence in him, which he passed on to the nascent civil rights movement in the 1950s.
Oh, no, you don't have to ride Jim Crow. On June the 3rd, the High Court said, when you ride in the state, Jim Crow is dead. You don't have to ride Jim Crow.
That's Bayard Rustin singing one of the civil rights anthems he wrote. Now, the Chester County Historical Society is commemorating the centennial of Rustin's birth.
We want people to know that he was from Chester County.
Enslow helped assemble an exhibit that highlights Bayard Rustin's Westchester roots.
And we wanted to talk a little bit about where his ideas came from in order for him to develop the activism and the nonviolent approach that became the hallmark of the civil rights movement.
Look at photos of Martin Luther King Jr., and chances are, right behind him, you'll see a tall black man with a bristly crew cut and an intense look on his long face. Why was Bayard Rustin always in the background? He was intelligent, passionate, and well-spoken. He was also gay, and for a time a member of the Communist Party, two factors which relegated him to a behind-the-scenes role in the civil rights movement. His name can still stir controversy, as when the Westchester School District dedicated a new high school after him in 2006.
There were people who were very upset to consider someone who had been a communist for a few years, and others were concerned that he was homosexual. No one really spoke too much about his race.
The Historical Society has planned several events around the exhibit, including a walking tour of Rustin sites in Westchester and a showing of the documentary film about Rustin, Brother Outsider. The opening event on March 3rd will feature a talk by Reverend Anderson Porter, who organized the Chester County participants in the March on Washington. The Westchester University Gospel Choir will perform tunes that Rustin, an accomplished musician, loved to sing.
Coming for to carry me home, sweet Lord, sweet chariot.
Bayard Rustin's local roots will be on display at the Chester County Historical Society through the end of May. For WHYY, I'm Kimberly Haas.
And to continue our conversation talking about the life and legacy of Bayard Rustin, we asked Michael Long to join us. He's an associate professor of religion and peace and conflict studies at Elizabethtown College, and he's also edited a collection of Bayard Rustin's letters called I Must Resist, Bayard Rustin's Life in Letters, just been published by City Lights Books. And Michael Long, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be with you, Marty, and that was a wonderful lead-in story.
Well, I give a shout-out to Kimberly Haas, that story. In fact, for more information, you can go to newsworks.org. Picking up on a couple of things that she said or some of the people that she interviewed said in that piece, why do you think Bayard Rustin is not as well-known as some of the other civil rights leaders, considering his contribution to the movement?
Well, there probably a couple of reasons come into play. One is that Rustin never really was the leader of an early civil rights group like the NAACP or the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, SCLC, or the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC. So he didn't, or even the Urban League or other organizations like that. So he wasn't the main leader of an early civil rights organization. But I think more important is that Rustin was openly gay, and he was often cast into the shadows of history by civil rights leaders, including Martin Luther King Jr. And because he was cast in the shadows early on, he has remained there for a long time. And we're hoping to bring him back out on the center stage of U.S. history.
Well, he was even arrested back in 1953 on morals charges. This was out in California. What were those charges about?
In 1953, in January of that year, Rustin went out to California to deliver some lectures on world peace for the American Friends Service Committee, who sponsored it, and some other peace organizations. And while he was out there, he gave a brilliant lecture in Pasadena. And then at the end of the lecture, he strolled around the city streets around 2:30 a.m. He waves to a couple guys in a car, in a passing car. They pull over, and the three of them are arrested on charges of lewd vagrancy. That arrest becomes monumental in Rustin's life for a couple reasons. One, it's often used by opponents of civil rights as fodder for fighting against civil rights campaigns in years to follow. But it's also monumental because it leads to his firing at the Fellowship of Reconciliation, which he worked for. It's an international peace organization based in New York City. And A.J. Musty was the leading pacifist at the time, and he had dealt with issues like this with Rustin for on a number of occasions. And eventually he gets sick and tired of it. And in 1953, after that arrest, he arranges to have Bayard fired. It's a really tragic story of FOR and I think of A.J. Musty's own personal history.
In fact, you include a letter that he wrote from prison, he meaning Bayard Rustin, and I'll just quote a line or two where he's writing to a guy named John Swomley, and he says, I know now that for me sex must be sublimated if I am to live with myself and in this world longer, for it would be better to be dead than to do worse than those I have denounced from the platform as murderers. And he goes on from there. But the idea that he had to, especially back in the 1950s, to figure out how to sublimate himself.
Marty, that is such a sad letter, and I really wanted to include it to draw attention to exactly that point. You know, Musty had encouraged Rustin to give up his gay sexuality and his gay relationships for the sake of the peace movement, for the sake of the cause of racial justice. And that went against a lot of who Rustin was. Mm-hmm. And it was very unfortunate that he felt that tension in his life and that he had to live in secrecy and that he had to deceive other folks along the way. But yeah, he felt this incredible pressure to sublimate his sexuality for the sake of peace. He felt it from A.J. Musty. He felt it from other leading figures. He felt it from friends. And he felt it internally as well. And would he feel the same way today? I doubt it. But given 1953, yes, indeed, he felt that.
Are you saying that there was deep homophobia within the civil rights movement?
There was deep homophobia within the peace movement. There was deep homophobia within the civil rights movement. There were leading Quakers who were very concerned that Rustin's homosexuality and his arrest on Ludwigernsee would really taint the peace movement that they were leading. And, you know, these were good, pious folks, and they end up cutting Rustin out of their movement as well. But, yeah, it's definitely in the civil rights movement. Can I tell you a story from
please
that?
Please do. Yeah, please do.
1960. Byard is organizing marches on the Democratic and Republican conventions, and he enlists Martin Luther King and the great labor leader A. Philip Randolph, one of my heroes, to organize or at least publicize the march. And they're the symbolic leaders of the march. They hold a press conference announcing the marches on the conventions, and Adam Clayton Powell, who's the representative of Harlem at this point, gets wind of the plan to march on the Democratic Convention, and he feels pressure from his superiors to halt the march on the Democrats. And here's what he does. He has an intermediary call Martin Luther King Jr. with a threat, and this is the sick threat. The threat is, if King does not call off the march on the Democrats, Powell will go to the media and tell the media that King and Rustin are having a gay affair. Mm. It's sick politics. It's politics of bigotry. And King is frightened. He is not a profile in courage in 1960. He's frightened of being tainted by Rustin's homosexuality. He's scared of being tainted by Rustin's arrest. He's really like a little turtle at this point, and he consults with some of his advisors, and they decide together to cut Rustin out of the inner circle, the civil rights leadership. It is a move of incredible bigotry and prejudice. It's really sad. And Rustin remains out of the movement for a couple more years.
And we're about a minute away from our first break here, but it also reveals the kind of power plays that were going on behind the scenes in the civil rights movement.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating? That's exactly right. And the threat was not about, you know, all the affairs and all the extramarital activity and all the promiscuity that was going on in SCLC and other civil rights groups at the time. It was about Rustin's gay sexuality. That's where the prejudice comes to the fore, and that's where you can see it clearest.
And was he able to sublimate it after that letter?
No, he was not able to sublimate it before 1953. He was not able to sublimate it in 1953. He was not able to sublimate it after 1953. And why should he? There's a great pacifist by the name of Dave Dellinger who says at one point, if you dam up Rustin's sexuality, it's going to come out somewhere, and it's going to come out in very damaging ways. And indeed, he was right.
Well, that's Michael Long. We're going to take a very short break and get back to our conversation. He's an associate professor of religion, peace, and conflict studies at Elizabethtown College, edited a book of Byard Rustin's letters called I Must Resist. We also are going to talk to Reverend Anderson Porter, who knew Rustin. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, the First Presbyterian Church in Philadelphia at 21st and Walnut, offering an inclusive commitment to the city and concerts throughout the year. Information at fpcphila.org or 215-567-0532.
This is Ira Glass of This American Life, and I'm excited to announce that I'm coming to Princeton, New Jersey to give a talk about how we put together our radio show each week. I'll be playing clips and favorite stories, and I can basically mix the show on stage live as you watch. And unlike some other public radio hosts, I do not sing. It'll be Sunday, April 29th, 3 in the afternoon at the MacArthur Theater in Princeton. Proceeds benefit WHYY. For more information, visit whyy.org/member experience.
Unemployment is still high, so are gas prices. But are there signs of light at the end of this dark economic tunnel? The latest jobless figures are out, and we will talk about what they mean. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
WHYY. WHYY programming is supported by the teachers and education support professionals of the Pennsylvania State Education Association, educating all children for a bright future. We are PSEA, providing the power of a great education.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. We are talking about the life and the legacy of Bayard Rustin. He grew up in Westchester, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia, went on to be a leader in the civil rights movement. And here's Bayard Rustin speaking at the 1963 March on Washington. Let's listen.
Friends, at 5 o'clock today, the leaders whom you have heard who go to President Kennedy to carry the demands of this revolution. It is now time for you to act. I will read each demand, and you will respond to it, so that when Mr. Wilkins and Dr. King and the other 8 leaders go, they are carrying with them the demands which you have given your approval to. The first demand is that we have effective civil rights legislation, no compromise, no filibuster, and that it include public accommodations, decent housing, integrated education, FEPC, and the right to vote. What do you say? Number two, they want that we demand the withholding of federal funds from all programs in which discrimination exists. What do you say? We demand that segregation be ended in every school district in the year 1963.
And that's Bayard Rustin speaking at the 1963 March on Washington. We are talking about his life and legacy. Again, Michael Long, our guest, he's a professor, an associate professor at Elizabethtown College, and he has edited a collection called I Must Resist, Bayard Rustin's Life in Letters. It's been published by City Light Books. Joining us now is Reverend Anderson Porter, and he's pastor of Wissanoming Presbyterian Church. That's in northeastern Philadelphia. Back in the 60s, he was a pastor of Second Presbyterian Church in Westchester, where he organized a Chester County contingent to the March on Washington, and he met and worked alongside Bayard Rustin. And Reverend Porter, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here.
And I have to say, I was a little girl then, but listening to that speech, it takes me back to Washington in 1963 and that now famous march. What are some of your memories of that march?
Well, I think, first of all, what elevated me is that many people never heard him speak. You could see he was a great speaker, and he never really got credit, you know, due credit for that. But he was mesmerizing whenever he spoke.
Right. When did you first meet Bayard Rustin?
In 1961, a year after I became pastor of the Second Presbyterian Church.
And how did you meet him?
Well, what it was, as you know, he was a Westchester native, and so it was easy to call on him to come back and give us a boost in the civil rights movement. And so that's how I first met him. I was part of a community program where we spoke about the problems in the Westchester and Westchester area. And Bayard came down to sort of give us needed information and also as to be a source of inspiration.
Well, and we're talking about segregated lunch counters.
Yes.
Segregated, movie theaters, banks?
Right. That's it. You name it, and Westchester could have been labeled the southern, northern place to be, because it really shocked me when I came to Westchester, because by being a southerner myself, and spending time at Lincoln University, I made the false assumption that up north there was freedom. Mm-hmm. And then when I moved to Westchester and found out I could not go into the Quaker restaurant and eat lunch, it was just shocking.
And that's even among Quakers, you're telling us.
Yes. The name of the restaurant is Quaker Restaurant. But, again, in defense of the Quakers, because I got to know many of them, people respond to the way things are. You know, somebody sets the stage and you go along, and if you don't have the guts to protest or the background or the support, more than likely you just go along with the program, and that's what's going on.
And what did Bayard Rustin do to address that problem?
Oh, my gosh. Years before he met me, he protested. He protested all his life, even when he was a youth, when he was in high school. Whenever he saw discrimination or segregation, he fought it. He spent time in jail because of his protest. But his whole manner was one of nonviolence.
Well, Michael Long, let me get you back in on the conversation. Anything you want to fill in from what Reverend Porter was describing, especially when it comes to Westchester in the 50s and 60s?
One thing I want to emphasize is that Bayard was deeply influenced by his grandmother, Julia. Julia and Jennifer reared Bayard as their own son. They were his grandparents, and she was influenced by Quaker values. And she taught Bayard about the nonviolent teachings of Jesus. She taught him great stories about the Exodus, freeing of slaves. She also taught him that if he did what was right and good and just, then he would dwell under the shadow of the Almighty. So she really built up his confidence and set him on the road to fighting for justice and peace. And it was really Julia Rustin and her deep influence over Bayard's life, right there in Westchester, that set the stage for his entire life and indeed the history of the United States.
And Reverend Porter, do you think that this message of nonviolence, that was an important message for the civil rights movement at that time?
Oh, yes. It was. Some people say it was a strategy, but it was a moral imperative. And when you talk about numbers and the amount of ammunition you may have on your side, nonviolence was the procedure, you know, and he was committed to that. Regardless of what happened, even if it cost him his life, he was going to go at it in a nonviolent fashion. And I became a disciple of his in terms of that.
He seemed to also be a good tactician. I mean, that he had those organizing skills. Would you say that's true, Reverend Porter?
Definitely. I began to wonder if there had been an effective March on Washington without him, his leadership and his ability to organize people and fix the procedure in which they needed to go.
So that was a needed skill at that time?
Yes.
Someone
yes.
that could do that? Michael, do you want to add to that?
Sure. I would like to say that Rustin once said that Martin Luther King Jr. could not organize a couple of bees to go to a honey festival. And that's really one of the reasons why King tapped into Rustin, because he was brilliant strategically and tactically. But not only that, he was also a visionary. And he was the intellectual bank, as Vernon Jordan put it, for the civil rights movement. And I want to piggyback on another comment.
Please.
Rustin was a great speaker. In fact, early on, he was known as one of the best orators for the peace movement. And as he got cast into the shadows, of course, by civil rights leaders, that skill, that gift, never really shone as brightly as it should have. But Reverend Porter is absolutely right. Bayard was a wonderful speaker.
And a wonderful singer on top of that, Reverend Porter.
An excellent singer. I think what is vitally important, as people speak to me about Bayard, what is vitally important, and we forget so easily, he had three strikes against him. He was black, he was gay, and at one time he belonged to the Communist Party. So there were mixed emotions, even with blacks in leadership position, as to how much of the forefront should we put by knowing that these marks worked in a negative way.
Does that explain the kind of backroom, right. I guess, dealing that he had to do?
That's it, 100%. The man, if it hadn't been for that, or if America had been a little more agreeable and to those three strikes, he would have been a top leader, as Martin Luther King was.
Well, we are talking about Bayard Rustin. In fact, this Saturday is the anniversary of his birth, the 100th anniversary, I should say,
right.
of his birth. And that's Reverend Anderson Porter, pastor of Wissanoming Presbyterian Church. That's in Northeast Philadelphia. And he knew Bayard Rustin from his days in Westchester. Also with us is Michael Long, associate professor of religion, peace, and conflict studies at Elizabethtown College. And he's edited a collection called I Must Resist Bayard Rustin's Life in Letters. And it has just been published by City Lights Books. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Michael, if I can go back to you, and Bayard Rustin was, I guess, if not attracted to the Communist Party, perhaps a member of the Communist Party, what was that early and short-lived attraction about?
The early attraction was focused on the Communist Party's dedication to fighting racial injustice. And so they were agitating for racial justice really at a time when nobody else was doing it. And Rustin was attracted to the young communists at this point in Harlem where he was living. And he became disenchanted with them as they focused on World War II, and they decided that they would shift their focus from fighting for racial justice to fighting the war. And Rustin became disenchanted at that point. He cut his ties, and then he formed really strong ties with the socialists. Now, Bayard Rustin was a socialist with communist roots. He was African American. He was pacifist. He was nonviolent. He was openly gay. So he has this great sense of the need for coalition politics. Mm-hmm. And while those were strikes, as Reverend Porter put it, they were also really good strengths for him in terms of recognizing the need to work with others to fight common prejudices.
Reverend Porter, I'm looking at one of the letters that Bayard Rustin wrote, and this is his description of the fight for civil rights in the South. And he writes, I've had protecting screws put on my windows, and Abernathy, that would be, I guess, Ralph Abernathy, now has 10 men without arms watching his home as the family sleeps. And he goes on to describe just the level of threat at that time in the South. And this is not so long ago in U.S. history. Can you remember that time as well?
Somewhat, yes. Mm-hmm. But at the time when many things that were going on outside the confines of Westchester and Chester County, our concentration 24 hours a day were on what we were trying to do locally.
Mm-hmm. And what did it take to, I guess, desegregate Westchester, Pennsylvania?
As much as I hate to say this, the 1964 and 65 Civil Rights Acts.
So it took the law?
The Voting Acts in 65 and the Civil Rights mm-hmm. Act of 1964.
Michael Long, you want to add to that?
Well, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 is significant because it emerges in part out of that March on Washington in 1963, which Bayard organized and was a brilliant visionary for. So those effects that they felt in Westchester following the Civil Rights Act of 1964 are directly attributable to the actions of their own son, Bayard Rustin.
Well, I'm also thinking there was a kind of Occupy Washington, Reverend Porter, back at the time, that the Poor People's March, where poor people set up encampments in Washington to protest the condition of their lives.
Yes, that's true.
I mean, it reminds me a little bit of the Occupy movement of last fall.
It does.
You see that? Do you see parallels there, Michael Long?
I see parallels between the Poor People's Campaign in 68 and the Occupy movement now. I certainly do. Bayard had some concerns about the Poor People's Campaign in 1968. He wasn't sure that, given the white backlash at the time, that there should be significant acts of civil disobedience. But after King was assassinated, Bayard offered his services to help lead the Poor People's Campaign. it didn't work out so well because there was a clash of personalities. But the difference here is that Byard had a singular focus on racial justice, and so the Poor People's Campaign was a time for him to focus on that one vision. The current Occupy movement has various targets and various causes, and that kind of multifaceted approach, I think, always concerned Byard.
Let me play a piece of a debate that Byard Rustin had with Malcolm X. This goes back to 1962. We're just going to play the Byard Rustin part of this debate, but it's a separation or integration debate. And Byard Rustin had been arguing in favor of integration as an approach to civil rights activism. Let's listen to a very small portion of that debate.
The problem can never be stated in terms of black and white. And any movement which begins by blocking out the active cooperation of the best minds, many of which are white as well as black, is fighting a losing battle.
Reverend Porter, he talked about an integrated approach to trying to integrate the country. Was that something that you also favored?
100%. One other thing while I'm talking.
Sure.
That I know that Byard was very, very concerned about. And I think this is one of the reasons why he probably did not have as much enthusiasm as many people hope in reference to the Poor People's March. Technology had ruled out jobs and job trainings for blacks. And Biden knew that if you don't have the money, if you don't have the type of job, if you don't have the right training, what good is integration if you can't go in and buy a sandwich or buy a home or whatever if you're not making the money to do it? And so he was very concerned about the lack of job opportunities and job skills that were needed for blacks who were losing out in the job market.
Well, Reverend Porter, about a minute before we have to say goodbye to you, what do you say Byard Rustin's main contribution, not just to the civil rights movement, but to the country?
To the whole country, the word integration, we are one. We're not a melting pot, but we're sort of a, you know how you mix...
like a soup?
Not a soup. when I go to Red Lobster and I get a salad, we're like a salad. You mix the tomatoes in it, you mix the other ingredients, and you mix it all together, and when you eat it, it tastes great. And this is what the world ought to be.
Well, you just gave a shout-out to Red Lobster. Reverend Porter, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you so much. It's been my privilege.
A privilege for us as well. Reverend Anderson Porter, pastor of Wissanoming Presbyterian Church, that's in Northeast Philadelphia, and he knew Byard Rustin from their days in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Michael Long staying with us for the rest of the hour as we continue our conversation, talking about the life and legacy of Byard Rustin. And we'll get some callers in as well at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Foundation supports WHYY. You can receive tax deductions for sustaining nonprofits across southeastern Pennsylvania. The Philadelphia Foundation works with financial advisors and administers donor-advised funds, charitable gift annuities, memorials, and scholarships. The Foundation takes care of all the details, making it easy for you to make a difference forever. The Philadelphia Foundation, 215-563-6417 or philofound.org.
Just like moms, some dads choose to stay home with the kids while others are thrust into the role. Either way, it's a big job without the support of a human resources department. Some dads feel unwelcome in a scene that's still dominated by women, while family and peers wonder when they're going to get a, quote, real job. I'm Dan Gottlieb, and on the next Voices in the Family, the growing demographic of stay-at-home dads. Today at noon, here on WHYY-FM.
Bucks County Community College supports WHYY and offers the essential first 2 years of a bachelor's degree with more than 80 majors to help prepare students for their chosen career paths. Bucks offers classes online and on campus in Newtown, Bristol, and Perkasie. An open house is planned from 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, March 28th in historic Tyler Hall at the Newtown campus. Details at bucks.edu or 215-968-8100. Bucks County Community College, where to learn. Where to return.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane talking with Michael Long about Bayard Rustin. And Michael Long writes in his edited book of letters of Bayard Rustin, I Must Resist. He describes him as Rustin the resistor, a conscientious objector, an anti-nuclear activist, a Korean War dissenter, an anti-colonial activist, a racial apartheid fighter, a loud opponent of communism, a hater of racial segregation, and much more. And Michael, I do want to get to some of our callers, but I want to talk about just a bit about, or have you describe, his interest in international issues, whether it had to do with Indian independence or apartheid in South Africa.
Rustin was deeply interested in international issues, partly because he had that wonderful sense that prejudice and discrimination are everywhere, and he felt compelled to fight it wherever he saw it. And he was also known as an international figure for world peace. And so movements across the globe would often tap into Bayard's vision and his tactical brilliance for assistance in their own campaigns. Some of his favorite causes were world peace, fighting the spread of atomic bombs. In fact, he went to Africa at one point to try to stop France from exploding a nuclear bomb on soil that they had colonized. He was unsuccessful, but it was a great, great attempt. Certainly, he was an early fighter against apartheid. He started that fight in the 1950s before anybody else was looking at the issue. There was Bayard, an early pioneer against apartheid. He became known as somebody, he became known as the go-to person for people looking for liberation and freedom from oppression in Africa and in Eastern Europe. He became a great fighter for Soviet Jewry as well under communist regimes. And so Bayard was this go-to guy that people yearning for liberation saw as a valuable resource for their own movements.
And he served time during, I don't know, was it World War II or the Korean War? Anyway, he protested the war, refused to serve, and spent time in federal prison.
Right. In World War II, he ended up in Ashland Federal Prison as a CO. And there he really shifted his focus and tried to fight racial segregation within the federal prison system. So he picks up a cause wherever it is. And he actually has some great success at Ashland and then later Lewisburg Federal Prison here in Pennsylvania.
Well, and how many times or how many days or months did he spend in prison or even years, I guess, over his lifetime? Then we'll get to our callers.
So he was in prison more than 20 times for his arrest, and I'm probably lowballing the figure there, but he was arrested many times, spent countless hours in jail, often under horrible conditions. And there he was trying to sublimate his sexuality at the same time. It was a difficult time. But you know what? Bayard would not give a day of it away because he thought that the cause required being jailed sometimes. And so he went to jail willingly. There are some wonderful photos of Bayard standing up straight, being escorted by white police officers to the paddy wagon. Those are some of my some of the greatest shots out there.
Let me get some callers in. Looks like we have Alice from Haverford joining us on Radio Times. And Alice, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
You're very
I am
welcome.
Very, very interested and pleased to see this program on the air.
Thank you.
And Michael Long, thank you so much for all you have done to make it people aware of what Bayard Rustin did. I became attached to Bayard when I first heard him sing at Westtown School, where I was a student. And then when I was in college, I marched with other students from Earlham College with Bayard to integrate the movie theater in Richmond, Indiana. One of the things that pleases me enormously just now is that the Fellowship of Reconciliation has put out a CD of Bayard singing, which among all his other organizational skills, he had a beautiful singing voice. and I was pleased to hear on this program some excerpts from that CD. Well, very, very nice. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Allison, and thank you for calling into Radio Times. And we touched on the fact that he did have a very good singing voice. In fact, sounds like he, and this is to you, Michael Long, that he studied singing or even acting while in college?
Well, when he went to Harlem, after he left Cheney, he took a job with Paul Robeson and his Broadway production. And then he ended up with Josh White, of all people, singing with Josh White in the Carolinians, and helped cut an album for Columbia Records with Josh White. Rustin has a beautiful voice, and he was very artistically inclined. He loved to doodle. I've seen some wonderful doodles that he's done. He loved music, especially classical music, and he was just artistically inclined everywhere. He collected African art and jewelry, so wherever he went, he was always on the lookout for wonderful pieces of art.
Alice, thanks for the call to Radio Times to see what Jim from Westchester has to say. And Jim, go ahead. You're on the air.
There. I'm interested. I know a fair amount about Byron Rustin's history when he was growing up here in Westchester.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, of course, I think everybody knows the story about him working with Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights.
Yes.
I'm interested in the transition. How did he get out of Westchester to go up to New York to go and work with A. William Randolph and the Pullman Union there?
That's a good question.
I don't know if you know anything about that or not, but if you do, I'd be interested in
I'm
hearing
sure,
it.
I'm sure our guest does. Do you want to take that? Go ahead, Michael.
Sure. That's a good question, Jim. Thanks for asking that. It was a difficult period in his life. After high school, Byard went to Wilberforce in Ohio, and it didn't seem to be a good fit. And then he came back to Westchester, and he went to Cheney State University. I guess it would be Teachers College at that point, right? During his time at Cheney, he did very well. He succeeded academically, but he left under difficult circumstances, and they seem to be related to his sexuality and to living out his gay sexuality. He left under very difficult circumstances, and he went to Harlem. He went to Harlem to find a new life, and he lived with his family there, and it turned out to be probably the best thing that he could have done. It was a really good fit for him, but he left in 1937 and then met a lot of artistic people in Harlem that he couldn't meet in Westchester at the time.
And he got involved with the Porters Union and activism related to the Porters Union?
Right, he did. He got involved with the communists and then the socialists, and that's sort of a natural into alliances with labor and A. Philip Randolph, who's the founder of the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters. And Randolph becomes his mentor. He loves Randolph as he loves nobody else, and he calls him Mr. Randolph out of respect his entire life. Randolph does not pry into Rustin's sexuality. He's concerned not about Rustin's homosexuality or his gay sexuality. He's concerned about Rustin's ability. And in fact, somebody once said to A. Philip Randolph, "Well, what do you think about Byard being gay?" And Randolph said, "Well, you know, Byard's incredibly talented, so maybe I should look for some more gay people to serve on my staff." Randolph was a gem of a man. And he actually founds a civil rights organization of sorts for Byard. They call it the A. Philip Randolph Institute, and Byard heads that in the mid to late 1960s forward. And in the mid to late 1960s, they worked together on something called the Freedom Budget, which was a budget designed to lift poor blacks and whites and people of color out of poverty. And Rustin said to President Johnson, if you actually enacted this budget, you wouldn't have to worry about the riots that you face all the time. So he and Randolph worked closely. They really loved each other. It's a wonderful story.
And we are talking about the life and legacy of Byard Rustin, and this Saturday would be his 100th birthday. Michael Long is an associate professor of religion and peace and conflict studies at Elizabethtown College, that's in Pennsylvania, and he's the editor of a collection of letters of Byard Rustin called I Must Resist, Byard Rustin's Life in Letters, and it's been published by City Lights Books. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499, that's 1-888-477-9499. WHYY. Michael, though, interesting, and this is probably a little bit later in his life, he did not support Jesse Jackson's presidential bid. He seemed to be critical of black studies programs at universities. Help us understand his thinking.
It seems as if Rustin takes a conservative turn to some people, and those are examples that they give. You have to look at Rustin on each particular issue and find out what exactly his thinking is. He's incredibly complex. He doesn't support Jackson in his presidential run because he believes that Jackson cannot exercise coalition politics. He believes that Jackson, while he's popular with the with African Americans, is not going to be popular with people outside the African American communities, and so he doesn't support Jackson. It would be interesting to think whether he would support President Obama, who's had the remarkable ability to reach into different constituencies in ways that Reverend Jackson never has been able to. In terms of the Black Studies program, he was concerned about the ghettoization of African Americans in the academy, and he believed that Black Studies would not be good for the sake of integration. Now, Rustin, remember, is a militant integrationist, and Black Studies, in his mind, counters that move towards integration. In fact, he sees it as countering integration. So he stands against young African-American militants at this point who are really crying out for Black Studies programs, and he stands firmly against them on the cause of integration.
I'm looking at a letter he wrote on May 15th, 1985, to Philadelphia Mayor Wilson Good. This was after the bombing of the Move House in West Philadelphia. The Move House, of course, went up in flames, as did a lot of that neighborhood. I'll just read one of the lines from the letter he writes. This is Bayard Rustin. I want you to know that many people of goodwill know and appreciate that you acted with patience and responsibility. How do you understand this letter to Mayor Good of Philadelphia?
Well, I don't understand that letter at all, unfortunately. I wish I did understand that letter. But that's one letter that is absolutely shocking to me. Bayard Rustin long believed in police power. He was a pacifist, but he believed in the intelligent use of police power, and he actually schooled King in this point. He said, yes, we're pacifists, but we also need police to protect us while we're exercising our constitutional rights. Now, the intelligent use of police power seems to me to run contrary to the dropping of a bomb on a residential area in Philadelphia. So I'm not exactly sure what Bayard's feeling was there. I think that he probably thought that Good had a few other choices at his disposal, but I certainly don't want to say that Rustin had a smart reaction to the dropping of the bomb on Move. I personally think it was a hideous move, and I can't explain it in terms of Rustin's own philosophy.
Which is part of one of the words that I ran across in people describing Bayard Rustin, was that he was a complicated man.
Complicated, complex, absolutely. He was a pacifist on the one hand, but on the other hand, he favored the sale of military jets to Israel for its protection. He was a pacifist, but he favored the dropping of this bomb on Move. He actually made the case that it was permissible or okay for Israel to sell military equipment to South Africa. So he's incredibly complicated, and quite frankly, I can't always figure out his moves.
He's
so complicated that sometimes we're just left thinking, what?
Get
it.
Fair enough. Let me see what Tina from, looks like Eagleville, has to say. And Tina, go ahead, you're in Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
A wonderful show.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
I'm so pleased that your guest has written, edited these letters. I got involved in the Gulf War and met a wonderful man, and I wonder if your guest knows of him, Homer Jack.
Yeah, go ahead.
Homer had nothing but wonderful, wonderful things to say about his friend Bayard. And I hope I'm not mistaken here, but I believe that Bayard Rustin gathered ministers to go to Montgomery when Martin Luther King was imprisoned there to support him. Is that correct?
Go ahead, Michael.
Well, this is really interesting. Homer Jack arrived in Montgomery shortly after Bayard left Montgomery, and Jack wrote a glowing letter about Rustin's contributions to King and the civil rights movement on the issue of nonviolence. Now, Rustin left Montgomery, this is really interesting, because local ministers were concerned about his homosexuality, it seems, and his roots in communism, and so he gets escorted by well, he gets sort of escorted out of Montgomery, mm-hmm. and he ends up going to Birmingham under secrecy and cloak. But Homer Jack comes in shortly after that and realizes that Rustin has played this huge monumental role in the early days of the Montgomery movement, and indeed Jack does as well. So they end up, they have a wonderful relationship. They're good friends, and it's really interesting to talk to somebody who knows Homer and Jack. So thanks for the call.
Yeah, Tina, thanks for calling into Radio Times. And Michael, about a minute before we have to say goodbye mm-hmm. here, Bayard Rustin also had long-term love relationships, did he not?
He did. Walter Nagel was his longtime companion for the last 10 years of his life. And Walter, he believed that he found his life partner at long last after many struggles and many relationships along the way. And Walter Nagel has played a critical role in helping Bayard understand the importance of speaking out for gay rights, which Bayard did in the mid-1980s in New York City. Thanks to Walter Nagel, Bayard really rose to the occasion and spoke out for gay rights. Walter's a wonderful man. He is the executor of the estate of Bayard Rustin.
Well, Michael Long, thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure to have you with us on Radio Times to help us all understand this complicated and important person, Bayard Rustin. Thank you very much.
Great chat, Marty. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And he's an associate professor of religion and peace and conflict studies at Elizabethtown College. And he's edited a collection of Bayard Rustin's letters called I Must Resist. And I should add that Chester County Historical Society exhibit Bayard Rustin Local Roots will run through the end of May. We also spoke with Reverend Anderson Porter, who knew Bayard Rustin from their days in Westchester. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out much more about this program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty Leswing, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us for today's edition of Radio Times.